Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to After Dark at blogtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Anthea, and I'm located here in New York City. And our co-host, Sandy, who is in California, she'll be here in a few moments. Well, for the past several weeks, we've been talking about Curanderissimo, which is folk magic and healing from Mexico. And tonight, we thought we'd do something a little bit different and talk about Santeria. And our guest tonight will be Jesse, who is from Brooklyn, New York, and he is a newly crowned priest in Santeria. And he will also be on our show. And also, just a reminder, we hope that people will be calling in to ask Jesse some questions if you're curious about Santeria or Curanderissimo. And that number is 646-478-5194. And in a few moments, we should have Sandy here and our guest. Oh, let me see. This might be Sandy. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, Anthea.
Hi.
Good evening.
I'm glad you're here tonight.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
Sure. I was just mentioning about our guest tonight, which would be Jesse from Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
Who is a Santeria priest, newly crowned.
Yes. Is Jesse with us yet?
Excuse me?
I said, is Jesse with us yet?
It looks like he is.
All right,
and
Jesse.
I am going to say hello.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Hello, Jesse.
Hi, how are you doing?
How you doing? Welcome to After Dark.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to the show. I'm having a little trouble hearing Jesse. I wonder if it's my phone here. Hello?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, that's better. Okay. Well, Jesse, it's really been great, just the connection so far that I've had with you, and I've just really been fascinated by your background. And and you're from Brooklyn, right? You're raised there all your life?
No, actually, I was originally raised in Los Angeles.
Oh, you were? Okay, so you've been around areas where there was all kind of diverse sort of spirituality then, huh?
Yes.
In New York now. So, and you told me that you are called is it a Yawu?
Yawu.
Yawu, okay. Yeah. And what does that mean?
Yawu is someone who is crowned in Santeria, but has not finished their novitiate year. So I have some restrictions that I'm still undergoing, and then after my year, there's some ceremonies that they do that officially makes me what is known as a santero.
Oh, a santero. So that's a Santeria priest, is it?
Yes. It is a priest that has undergone the cariocha or asiento ceremony, where they seat your patron, your tutelary Orisha, on your head. Orishas being our mediating spirits between us and God.
Oh, so, and what were you saying about the head? What does that mean when someone rules your head in Santeria?
It is believed that before you come to Earth, you choose a patron deity, if you will, that, among other things, is tied to a force in nature and determines things like personality or just a lot of different things about you. Spending time around someone can kind of reveal which Orisha are strong with them, and through a divination process, they confirm which Orisha is said to rule your head being the seat of your soul.
And so
the cariocha ceremony specifically is kind of our marriage ceremony to that spirit, where we are permanently bonded to that spirit.
Oh, okay. So is there just one spirit or, one Orisha that particularly is kind of like your main one in life?
In Lukumi, in the Cuban form, and from what I know, everything about Candomblé in Brazil, there is one. There are cases in Yoruba land in Africa, where you can be crowned with more than one. We are said to have a primary Orisha that is who we are the priest of. I am a priest of Obatala. Eventually, once I go through my year, I will be a priest of Obatala.
Oh.
We have a corresponding Orisha parent that is of the opposite gender of the spirit that we have crowned. So we have a mother and a father.
Oh, yeah.
So my father...
I've heard people say, I'm the daughter of, or I'm the mother of, or I'm the daughter of a certain Orisha. Does that mean that they're a priest or priestess, or can anyone have that?
As soon as you know which Orisha is your guide, you are considered a child of that Orisha. You are not an Alosha or a person who has that Orisha until you go through the crowning ceremony.
Oh, I see. And what does the crowning ceremony consist of?
It is a week-long ceremony. The ceremony itself is a week-long. It takes months to prepare for it. But the main bulk of it happens in the first 3 days, in which they consecrate your shrines that will be your receptacle for divine energy, which are yours after your week, and as well as making your head an actual shrine for that deity. And that's the first day. The second day is kind of a day of rest. Oftentimes they have a drumming on that day. And on the third day, they actually give you a life reading, which is called an Ita. And in the Ita, you learn your destiny, past, present, and future, your relationships, what specific names your spirits might have, and your own name in the religion, because after your year, you're known by that name.
Is that right? Okay. And during that year, you say you have the 10-day or, week-long ceremony, and then do you wear white or shave your head, or what happens?
Yes. Well, your head is shaved for you during the ceremony.
I see.
Your head is shaved for you almost always. There are certain cases where it wouldn't be, but the crown of the head will at least be shaved. And the following year, you'll be wearing white completely. Men would be to the ankles, to the wrists in white, head covered completely for the first 3 months. Nice shoes. It's an appearance of being. It's a presentable appearance. It's a conservative, presentable appearance. For women, the first 3 months they have a shawl. They have pantaloons. They have tights. There's a lot of things that go with it, and there's a lot of actual jewelry that goes with it. During your year, you cannot wear any other jewelry that is not religious, save perhaps a wedding ring if you are already married.
You can't? Or you can't?
Yeah,
you
cannot. You can wear your wedding ring, but you wouldn't wear any other jewelry. You only wear religious jewelry during your year.
Oh, okay. Now, I don't know what the ceremony is called, but, there's the beads that are of certain colors and certain patterns.
Yes.
Is that something that you would wear during that time, that year?
Yeah, there are generally considered three, maybe four steps of initiation. The first one for us, which is equivalent maybe to a baptism, is called the Elekis or the Goyades ceremony, which means beads. Elekis is the proper African term, and Goyades is a Spanish term. And in that ceremony, you are washed with a holy water, an herbal water, and you are presented with the beads, usually four or five different Orishas, the primary Orishas, they call them. Alegua is the road opener. Obatala is the ruler of everybody. He is the creator.
What's his name again?
Obatala.
Obatala, right, Obatala. And that's your Orisha, correct?
That is my patron Orisha, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, until you know your head, every single person is a child of Obatala because he created mankind. So therefore, you are under the protection of Obatala. So anybody can pray to Obatala because he is that. He and she, there are female roads of Obatala. I won't neglect the female Obatala.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But Alegua Obatala, Shango, which is a very popular Orisha. Alegua is symbolized by black and white beads, or black and red, or black and white, depending on the path, but usually black and red beads. Obatala is pure white.
Right, and did you say Elegua was red and black, right?
It was red and black, yes.
And he's the road opener, so, I've heard this before, but, can you say a little more about the fact that if you want something to happen, do you always go to Elegua first?
Because you do.
Yes?
The first thing you would make sure is that the dead are taken care of, and then you would go through and to Elegua. Elegua controls all openings.
I see.
Every door, so... He is the power of speech itself. There is an aspect of Elegua that is placated and propitiated before every ceremony, even with drops of water, if nothing else, so that your prayers can be heard by the Orishas, because he is the act of communication.
Oh, because he's kind of the go-between, huh?
Yeah, he's the flow of all energy. So
okay.
If you want energy to flow, you need to talk to Elegua.
Okay. So would you place, a head or something symbolizing Elegua facing the door of your home? Is that how it's used? Or?
He is used like that. Most people who are not initiates yet would buy a statue of St. Anthony of Padua or the Holy Child of Orsa. And those two saints, St. Anthony and the Holy Child of Orsa, are considered, those are the syncretizations of Elegua.
They're emanations of him, then.
Yeah, so in the Cuban form, when the saints, the Orishas were guides, they were guides of certain saints, and certain aspects are viewed as certain saints. So the Niño de Atocha, or the Holy Child of Atocha, being a young child saint who is miraculous, was considered to be an emanation of Elegua.
Oh.
So in many places you'll find people with a shrine to St. Anthony behind the doorway, which is a common Catholic practice anyway, or to the Holy Child of Atocha. And you see the Holy Child of Atocha giving candles once a week and candy. It's because those people come from a background where they're familiar with Santeria, but are not necessarily practitioners, or they might be. Many people hide their warriors. After you asked about steps of initiation, so you get your beads in those patron orishas, after which, some people do it at the same time, but the next step would probably be to receive warriors. Warriors meaning Elegua, Ogun, Ochosi, and Osun, which those four orisha are the spiritual foundation that gives you... they help fight your battles for you. They help you to fight battles within yourself that need to be fought. They increase your ability to elevate yourself. And Elegua being, of course, one of the most important orishas around, and probably the most important orisha to receive first because of that. He's symbolized by a small head made out of cement. It could go in a coconut. It could go in a seashell. It could go in something. It depends on the reading. There are different caminos or roads of the orisha, and sometimes one orisha road walks with you because you have an affinity for that road. Other times one is going to come with you for a specific time in your life, or you may need an additional one later. So you can actually receive more than one Elegua, but the main thing is that you have an Elegua to open those roads.
Right, right. Well, you know, I went to a priestess once of Oya who made me a traveling one.
Mm-hmm.
And she put one of my earrings into the head and ceremonially prepared it,
mm-hmm.
and then of course told me to keep the other earring. What's the significance of that?
Well, your Elegua is personalized.
Okay.
It needs to have a bond with you. There are our shrines and our spiritual receptacles. It's such a cold term, but it's hard because it's not idolatry. It's not about that physical object is the god.
Right.
It's more about allegory than symbolism. If, for instance, Elegua is the crossroads, amongst other things. The crossroads contains the ashe, which is our word for energy, divine energy, of Elegua. If you collect crossroads dirt, and you have this cement head of Elegua, and a priest who is knowledgeable in the prayers of Elegua, and knows what herbs belong to Elegua, and what mineral substances he likes, puts all these things together and then ceremonially prepares it, it has more ashe of Elegua than, say, something that's just, you know, an image of him or something, because it has lots of that ashe in it.
I see.
So
it's like
kind
alchemy
of like,
in a way, right?
Pardon?
Like alchemy in a way.
Very much so. The sum being greater than the parts.
Right.
And it's almost like a telephone. In a way, but it's not, we treat it with extreme respect, and we don't let people touch it that aren't priests. We barely let other priests touch it,
mm-hmm.
But it's because it's your relationship with God, and it's how you communicate with God, and it's made for you to communicate with God, because Elegua exists whether or not we have a stone head behind our door.
Right.
So that's what it is. I mean, you can work with orishas in nature. It's just as powerful to go to the ocean and talk to Yamaya, who is the Orisha that is maternally protective,
mm-hmm.
and is the mother of us all. And she's in the ocean. Her Ashe is in the ocean. To go to the ocean and talk to her directly is an incredible privilege and something anybody can do.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a priest, you don't need to necessarily go to the ocean. You have a receptacle that you can talk to her through.
Okay.
The idea being that a priest needs to access those energies more readily and more quickly.
I see.
But, for instance, even if we place an offering to, for instance, Yamaya, we have to ask, where do you want this offering disposed of? And she may say the trash is fine. She may say you need to take it to an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still left up to them. We're a very divination-heavy religion. We check everything with the spirits.
Okay. So what would the next step be? You said there's the warrior. The warrior Orishas, again, are which ones?
Elegua, Ogun, Ochosi, and Osun. Yeah.
And what's the last one?
Osun. Osun is a very stereotypical Santeria implement. It's the chalice that's like chrome-plated with bells and a rooster on top.
And he's male, right?
Yes. There's, okay. It's different from Oshun, who is a deity in her own right, and she is a fantastically important.
Yes.
And,
yes. Okay.
One of, I owe everything to Oshun.
Mm-hmm.
But Osun is a deity that represents your ability to manifest your destiny.
Uh-huh.
The belief being that our Ori, which is our destiny that we chose before birth, we are either in alignment with our Ori or we're in disalignment. When we are in disalignment, that's when things go bad.
Yeah.
When we're in alignment with it, we are living out our fullest potential. You're being all you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the main role of divination, is to see how you can realign yourself with your Ori and make the right choices so that you have, that you accomplish the things that you are supposed to accomplish in this lifetime. Because if you don't accomplish them, you're going to come back.
Oh, right. And that's kind of like that feeling of being on the beam, or like you're on the wave. You're in your kind of dharma, right?
Yes.
Things start flowing, and you sort of feel like you're in the groove, so to speak, right? That's
yes.
And plus the universe will speak back to you, right? Like you know things start to come together. And does that mean like financially and emotionally and everything? Things seem to, you know, where you're more in sync. Is that how you know?
I would say so.
Yeah.
You know, life is full of things no matter what. I mean, it's a strange relationship we have with the world around us. I mean, in Yoruba cosmology, pre-Christian and Islamic influence, and I say that because in Africa there's a lot of Christian and Islamic influence that continue to take place even after the slave trade transposed this religion to the New World, both in Cuba, Trinidad, Brazil, and other places.
Mm-hmm.
There's no good or evil. There's no deity that is all good and deity that is all evil.
Mm-hmm.
It is mankind that manipulates the energy that is around them, and it's mankind's mouth and mind that morph this energy, the Ashe, that is around them into good or evil. So a god or a deity or an Orisha or whatever you want to call them is not necessarily, there are trials and tribulations that you'll go through in your life. And sometimes an Orisha might be putting you through it so that you grow.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it may be the work of a man or a woman. I mean, it may be the work of mankind who mm-hmm. has put these things in your way. Or it may be yourself, which most often we find out that it really is yourself that is making you go through the harsh things in life.
Right.
But again, so things do flow more easily. And, mm-hmm. you know, that is the measure of a success. It's maybe not necessarily how much you receive from the world, but how you are able to deal with what you receive from the world.
Right. And when things sort of, I'm just asking, you know, because my own personal interest is that I feel like, you know, when I think that you start to get like a confirmation from the universe, too, that you're doing the right thing, right? Because things
Absolutely.
Start to open up, right?
Absolutely.
And so what part, and so you said that was Osun, right? That's the warrior.
Osun. Yeah, Osun. They put the accent on the first syllable.
And how do you spell it?
O-S-U-N.
Oh, Osun. Okay. So you have these warriors, and you're getting initiated, you're bringing them in or something, you're integrating them? Is that what you do?
Yeah, you get your coyotes, your beads. You have those for a while, or it might be determined that you have to do both right away. And
mm-hmm.
you receive a little head of a legua. you receive an iron cauldron that has the tools of Ogun. Ogun is an Orisha that controls all metal.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, he controls a lot of things, from surgical implements to trains to transportation in general to mm-hmm. weapons of war. He is the one that cuts the path, because he, if you're taking a wilderness thing, that's what controls the doors, but is Ogun that has the machete that cuts the path.
I see.
So Ogun is a blacksmith and a butcher and a surgeon and all these things that works 24/7. He is the workman's Orisha. Oshosi lives with Ogun when you receive him with warriors. It's symbolized by a bow and arrow. And Oshosi is the hunter Orisha and connected to truth. There's many stories about all these Orishas, but a quick one about Oshosi, that why he symbolizes truth, is he had brought home some birds, I think pheasants is in some versions of the story, to his house, and was expecting that they would be there for dinner, and his mother came in while he was out hunting more and saw the pheasants and took them to her house so that she could cook them for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home and found that his pheasants were not there, and went outside and shot an arrow into the sky and said, well, this should pierce the heart of the person that stole my birds, and it pierced the heart of his own mother.
Oh.
This Orisha, and of course that does not begin to say that it's truth at all costs, but he is an Orisha that the arrow of truth pierces your heart with him. He is the hunter. He is the ability to track truth. He is the ability to track anything. So,
is he related to the legal system, too, or...?
Is he related to the...
Like, if you're looking for, have legal problems or whatever, would you...
Absolutely. He is the one that a lot of people go to for court justice. Between Oshosi and Obatala, they own the prisons. Oshosi,
oh, right, the bar is the... Well, that's Ogun, the metal, right?
Ogun is the metal, but Oshosi is the ability to escape and be detected, because if he controls tracking, he controls the ability of people to track you. So slaves petitioned Oshosi when they would escape. Because he's so connected to the forest, he actually lost some popularity in Cuba. He's still very strong, but nowhere near the amount that he receives in Brazil. Oshosi in Brazil is a huge Orisha, and that's mainly because, you know, in Cuba, the religion manifested and it went into people's houses. In Brazil, when people would escape, they actually formed entire societies away from the cities and recreated African compounds where people would live together and worship Orisha together. So there was a lot more confluence of thought from Africa, and Brazil being so close to Africa kept much, very, very close contact. There was a lot of fluidity because of the trade systems, and people did go back and forth to Africa. But Brazil and Cuba have different Orisha prominences because of this, and there are certain Orishas that made it to Brazil that didn't survive in Cuba, and there are certain Orishas that are in Cuba that never made it to Brazil or died out in Brazil. So it's an interesting thing when you compare all these different branches of this religion and how many millions of practitioners there are. It is a huge, major world religion that is completely ignored by a lot of Western society. In Brazil alone, they say there's between 35 and 40 million practitioners of Orisha religion.
Is that right?
And well, I would say, that's more than Yorubaland itself now. Originally, the Nigerian African areas. And so by the time you're putting all these groups together, you're talking between 40 and 50 million, 60 million people practicing some version of Orisha religion.
I was just going to, I was reading somewhere that about 100,000in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
Cubans now practice it. That number to me sounds very low, and that also in, I guess, the major cities like New York City,
mm-hmm.
Chicago, and Los Angeles.
Yes.
But that number seems low to be 100,000. How is the practice different in America than perhaps Brazil or back in Cuba?
The main difference is, Cuba is the gateway for North American Orisha religion. There are very few Candomblé priests operating in North America. That doesn't mean that there aren't Candomblé priests at all. It just means that, from my understanding and my contact with Candomblé priests, to initiate someone into Candomblé, you have to fly to Brazil. You have to be made in Brazil at this point. I don't believe there has been, and hopefully someone will call in or send an email if this is incorrect, but to my knowledge, there is no legitimate Candomblé priest made in the United States, to my understanding. There are, however, Candomblé is not the only Orisha tradition from Brazil. I mean, there are other traditions. Cuba gave us Santeria. Spanish-speaking population, extremely popular in Mexico, Venezuela, Colombia, Puerto Rico. It's spread amongst Mexican population pretty quickly, which is how it came to me. My mother's family is Mexican, and I have family that practices.
Do they practice curanderismo, or do they practice Santeria?
My family actually originally practiced curanderismo, going generations and generations and generations back. Any strong Mexican family has roots in curanderismo in the sense that it is folk Catholicism. Some people will have a don, a gift that is stronger than others, and therefore gain a certain amount of fame. And once you come from a family that has a famous curandero or a curandera in their past, your family gets known for it. Mm-hmm. I have family that in Los Angeles investigated Santeria more because they were exposed to other forms of seemingly Catholic things that upon further investigation was actually a completely separate religion that enthralled them and became a major part of their lives. So like many people, many older Santeria practitioners consider themselves Catholic first. Santeria is their lifestyle and their life, but their religion, as far as it is, the religion being something you do in a church, would be Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And so my family practiced both. They were my main gateway through this was the family member that practiced was mainly a curandera, mainly devoted to the Catholic saints, but she was also crowned Oshun.
Mm.
And it was when I say I owe everything to Oshun, I say I owe everything to Oshun,
yeah,
that woman. So, I mean, it's interesting. Local saints will come up with different things. In Mexico, there's a tendency to put the Virgin of Guadalupe, syncretize her with Oshun, which makes a lot of sense, because in Cuba, the saint they associate with Oshun is Caridad de Cobre, who is the patroness of Cuba. And the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico is the patroness of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So people take it and make it their own. There tends to be a little bit more emphasis on Catholic things in Mexican houses of Santeria. But it is still, there are certain things that must be done to make it Santeria. There is a legitimate lineage. You can ask somebody, who made you? Who made them? Who made them? Most people can trace their roots back to one of the few couple dozen people that came from Africa to Cuba. And you can check on these things. And I encourage anybody that's getting involved in the religion to make sure that they do check that lineage, because it is a religion since it was so underground for so long, and there are legitimate Santeria quote-unquote churches now, but the average person would go for a reading in a botanica or with a friend on recommendation to somebody who might read cards, they might read shells, they might do a lot of different things, but I would encourage...
What besides shells do they use for readings?
Well, the main, if you were going for a consulta or a registro with somebody, you would be going for a shell reading most likely. Some people would use tarot or playing cards, but if it's about the religion, it would be done with shells. The consecrated shells, the cowrie shells, are considered the mouthpiece of Orisha. And there are certain, depending on the number that falls, and they give you a certain amount of things to put in your hands that the shells tell the person which hand to choose and things like this. You'll find out very detailed patterns of energy that are surrounding you. And there are stories associated with each of those patterns. And a competent diviner will be able to pick out which stories have meaning to you, which Orishas are standing up for you at that time, which Orishas you could go to for help about the subjects that they are seeing surrounding you. They might tell you, you would be greatly helped out by going through the necklaces ceremony, or they might tell you, you know, you're doing fine, you should just tend to your dead, and that should be it for a while. There's a lot of different things.
I just want to mention, I had spoken to a Santero for help,
mm-hmm.
and he associated me with Chango.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, what he saw in me. I mean, do they see something, or because he's...
I think no matter what, competent or incompetent, I think everybody sees Orishas around them constantly, because that's how we're constantly relating to the world. Everything is associated with an Orisha, everything.
Well, he felt, because of my profession at the time, and he felt because I had a temper.
Mm-hmm.
That I had a situation where I guess I was very upset. So he wanted Chango for me to do a ritual for Chango. Mm-hmm. And it involved, this is maybe it involved getting a piece of meat.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I can remember, and going over my body with it in one direction,
mm-hmm.
and then taking it and putting it in a brown bag,
mm-hmm.
and then he wanted me to put it under a tree.
Yep.
And I drove, I tell you, because I'm living in the city, you know how hard it is to find a tree that's isolated?
Yeah, it can be hard.
Yes, it can be hard. And so I went to a park, and I walked into this park, dark at night, and I put the bag under a tree, and then I guess you leave and you don't look back.
Mm-hmm.
But does that sound, go ahead.
There are many different, what they call ebos or cleansings, or what. Ebo can mean many things. It often means sacrifice, but a sacrifice can be a prayer. It could be a cooked meal. It could be a piece of meat that is being used to clean you. And Shango is a very temper heavy Orisha. He's lightning. He's
yes.
fire.
Mm. Yes.
And he is the life of the party and the drums. But when he is heated, when the Shango energy in you is heated, it
mm-hmm.
brings out your temper. It brings out your need to perform. It brings out a lot of things. But if it's overheated and overabundant and overpowering other Orisha energies that you need to function,
mm-hmm.
You try and calm it down with an external thing. So by taking that piece of meat, you're trying to cleanse that excess energy and put it into the meat and take it somewhere. Shango's, a lot of Orisha's offerings can be left at the foot of a tree. Like Shango specifically could be taken to many different types of trees, but you know, they often take it to a palm tree or something like that. But it could be cleansed with anything. You know, if you were, you know, for a Legwa, what happens when you go to a very volatile spiritual area, something like a hospital where there's a lot of energy, or a cemetery, or an event where there's tons and tons of people, you'll see people take coins, pennies, and candy, and you pass it over your head and your body in motions that look like you're scrubbing yourself with a sponge
right.
or something, and it's discarded. And it's considered an offering both to the Orisha that they take the stuff away, but the energy through the contact is still on those things. So there's a lot of things that can be prescribed from a reading. Amongst other things, it may say that that the person reading you should talk to you about possibly becoming their godchild, or that they should take you to someone so that you can become involved in a religion. There are other divination methods that are used, primarily the coconut, which is four pieces of coconut that their up or down value of white or black determines answers, but that is used usually in direct conversation with an Orisha or with the dead. So those are for more yes or no questions. For a very complex question, you would go to shells.
Yes, I remember he gave me a coconut shell. I think it was a candle in it, though.
Mm-hmm. Very, very possibly. I mean, coconuts are a very important thing in general because they are roughly representative of a human head. They have little eyes and a mouth, and it's sacred to every Orisha. You can offer coconut to any Orisha. Most often you see it offered to a spirit like a Legwa because a Legwa can actually live in a coconut. But coconuts symbolize the head, and the head being the seat of the soul and our intelligence and symbolic of our destiny. The coconut is a very interesting thing. When you go to a Santero's house, every year the anniversary of your initiation is celebrated.
Right.
And you throw a giant open house. You have cooked lots of food. You dress up your Orishas in beautiful brocades, and they have hundreds of dollars of beads put all over them, and they just radiate ashe, this energy, and you cook all this food for them. And when you go to that house, a common gift would be coconuts. If I was going to my godmother's house, I would take her two candles, two 7-day candles, two coconuts, and a small sum of money. And everybody that comes puts a little bit of money there to help pay for this celebration that reaffirms the presence of the Orishas in our life. And it's kind of like a testimony that you give all these offerings and make this, what they call a trono, a throne, for the Orisha every year. And it's a very beautiful and seemingly simple, because it's a party. And, you know, sometimes there's music, sometimes there's just people, lots and lots of people having a really good time and checking in with each other, because this is a very food, community, family-driven religion.
Okay. Just want to remind listeners, if you'd like to call in and ask questions, number is 646-478-5194. Another thing, too, about the practice, like when you go into a botanica, there's a lot of emphasis on reading the Psalms. Like the woman behind the counter would say, well, read this Psalm with this candle or some, for whatever it is that I'm trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And I was told by the Sun Tarot that the Psalms are curses and charms.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right, because I had a book that was, it was written by a rabbi, actually. It was called the code, the Bible code, or something like all through the Bible, all the words written in there are words of power. That the words, I guess, symbolically mean. I guess there's some kind of code. If you think, I wish I had read the book fully, would equal the name of God. But
yes.
you agree with that?
Well, I mean, if you're talking from a biblical point of view, the fact that Hebrew each
letter,
so a number,
right.
Or even in Greek, each letter is also a number. I mean, that gives us everything from why the Gnostics associate the serpent with Christ, and why in their worldview Christ was sneaking into the Garden of Eden, the Christ spirit was, to liberate the prisoners, Adam and Eve, from a creator God that wasn't the true God. That is why the Gnostics put that spin on it, because
right.
the number for Christ, or the number for Messiah, and the number for serpent were the same, and it governs everything to why we associate 666 with the Antichrist. But the whole argument for it being that if you spell out the letters that spell out that number, it's Nero Kaiser, which is Caesar Nero, who was a horrible man at that time period, and he was killing Christians and boiling them alive. So it makes sense that the number of his name became the number of the beast. And there are tons of theories behind that.
Right.
But just like how Orisha religion would associate certain things with certain Orishas, including numbers. For instance, Shango would be associated with the number 6, hugely numbered with the number 6, and the colors red and white. So something has, if you want to make an offering to Shango, 6 red apples would be very appropriate. Everything has associations, and the same is true for religions around the world. It doesn't matter what religious path you're going into, but for the Hebrew Testament, for the Hebraic scriptures, certain words, certain names of God, you're talking about a collection of different tribes that had different names for different aspects of their one God.
That's right.
And so you have what they call the Yahwistic writers, or the Elohistic writers. Different periods of history used different names for God, and different tribes had different names for God, and some of them had female counterparts for their male versions of their gods. And they were collected at one point and put them together into this book, which the book itself is very calculated,
mm-hmm.
the written scriptures of the Hebrew scriptures, because certain phrases will add up to certain things. And Christianity, when it inherited this scripture, started taking these things and investigating it as well, and applying it to their own things of creating angels and demons out of scripture. And Psalms, for instance, while they wouldn't be used in something like an initiation ritual, something, it would involve almost nothing like that. However, when you are going for spiritual advice, they would use various prayers, because they're practicing what they call Spiritismo, which is a spin-off or an inheritance of Kardecian Spiritism, which uses Catholic worldview, the belief in Christ and the devil and the power of Scripture. Most santeros, especially in New York, many santeros, I won't say most, most santeros coming out of Cuban practice oftentimes have a bóveda in their house, and a bóveda is a collection of water glasses that are consecrated to the dead. And these things help, or what you pray over, to give light, to give energy to the dead that may be struggling, to, you know, the trapped souls in purgatory. According to our current Pope, there is no purgatory, but for hundreds of years there was. And, or as well as to elevate your own dead, your family dead that may need help, your spirit guides that are coming to help you. This is a way for you to give them energy and thank them for the energy that they are giving you and the guidance they're giving you.
Right. Is that called
Egun or no? Egun are your blood dead. There are a lot of, it depends on the house teachings. When And anything I say, you know, it's one of those things that I'm going through what I was taught in my house and my own readings, but you always go off the advice of your elders. Some houses consider Egun in general to be not only your blood debt, but some houses do consider your spirit guides your Egun. In our house, we don't, because our spirit guides are something completely different. Egun is your blood debt. The blood that is flowing in your veins is Egun. Your parents, and those names are called in a ceremony. Before you do anything, before you even deal with Alegua, you're dealing with Egun. And Egun, because they are so important, are propitiated first. And there is a staff that you receive. Usually, by the time you receive warriors, you'll have a staff. Sometimes it's the first thing that you do is receive a staff. It's usually a stick. Sometimes it's carved. Sometimes it's covered with ribbons. And this stick is tapped on the ground. And the history behind it, truthfully, is that in many West African cultures, the dead were buried in your house, under the floorboards of the large room. And when you bang a stick on the floor, you're waking up the ancestors.
Oh, I see.
So we place offerings to the ancestors on the floor. Because in truth, well, you ate on the floor in West African tradition. And that contact with the earth is the ancestors replenishing the food and all these things. So they're very connected to each other. But the stick banging on the floor calls the dead. And you give them an area. We give a small piece of our food on a plate, usually a chip plate. And every morning, I personally, a lot of priests do. So you keep a habit. You develop a habit. Some people do it once a week. Some people do it once a month. Some people do it every day. You offer them coffee. You offer them a glass of water, the things that they liked in life. And it's funny because if you grew up with it, it doesn't seem so strange. It seems strange to some people. But there are actually correlating practices around the world about how you treat the dead. And if you go into Western Europe, there are a lot of Celtic derivative practices about talking to the dead and dealing with the dead, everything from the Dumb Supper on Halloween, to just having a picture and saying hi once in a while to that person.
And Santeria, do you just talk to them just like you would if they're on the earth?
Absolutely. Sometimes you talk to them a little bit nicer.
Definitely.
but it would be nice if people could treat each other so nicely when they're alive.
Isn't that true?
But you would start with a prayer. You would offer fresh water, which symbolizes a purity, a purifying. You would usually light a candle. You might put some cooked food there as a sacrifice from your own, so that you're showing that I am willing to give up part of my food for you, because they gave up their, you are the sum total of their existence.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to hear things. And I don't mean like in a schizophrenic, hallucinatory way. You get an impulse. And when we have sudden insight into something that it seems like we have no background in, we call that, we say it's Egun speaking. You have affinities that your family had affinities for. You might like the exact same thing that your grandmother did, even though you were too little when your grandmother died and you don't know it, and your parents say, God, you're just like your grandmother, because her spirit is strong with you. And there are certain spirits that surround you, and those can actually come up and speak. For instance, in a reading, there are many sources of these energies. You could get Ire, good luck, at the feet of a very specific ancestor of yours. Your grandmother could come up and speak in your Orisha ceremony and say, I am blessing her, I am blessing you, because of the energy that is surrounding you right now is beautiful, and I wanted to put in my word that... So Egun themselves can speak in anything, and they're incredible force. If you have your Egun strong, you're fine.
Okay, because if when you're going into Santeria, like if a person, say, had an affinity for the dead, say, for instance, when my grandfather started talking to me after he passed away and we were real close, and it happened, you know, whenever I would need his help, I was starting at around age 10 or 11, and I was wondering, you know, if a person goes into Santeria and that is kind of something that's happened to them, would they take that up as a main practice, you know, or what? Is that like a sign that you're supposed to work with the dead? Or
dealing with the dead? Everybody deals with the dead.
Okay.
You have to, as a santero or as an abo. Anybody that is not crowned is referred to as an aleyo. But there is a politer term for people that have received beads. You become an aborisha at that point, which means worshiper of orisha.
Mm-hmm.
because a santero is somebody who has finished their year in white and has been presented to the room of ceremony. You have to be presented to everything. So you've gone through the right ceremonies to make you a priest at that point.
I see.
So there's kind of these in-between stages with everything. But you deal with the dead constantly.
Okay.
Everything. Before every ceremony, the dead are put in them. There are some people, though, that are called to be morteros, people who work the dead. And these are people who have a gift for knowing what the dead need and want. Sometimes they are people who are gifted subedores or mounts, horses, caballos. You know, there's so many terms for this, but Santeria being a what they call a possession-based religion, the dead can mount us as well. And there are what they call misas, masses, in Kardecian spiritist form, where prayers are said and certain dead are allowed to come through the body of a priest. Or not necessarily even a priest, because in a misa, the hierarchy is gone.
Okay.
Somebody who is praying, that spirit might come through them. Sometimes it is the spirit of somebody else in the room, like somebody's dead might mount somebody who's an experienced mount, or it might be your spirit guide or your dead that come into the room to try and help out what's going on.
It's about imparting wisdom or some answers or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's definitely about guidance and health.
Okay,
those are the main things.
Would that person be necessarily connected to Oya or not? Or they wouldn't have to be?
They wouldn't have to be.
Okay.
Oya is a fantastically complex Orisha. I mentioned earlier about how we have a mother and a father. Oya is my mother. Obatala is my crown, but Oya is my second parent.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, every Orisha is incredibly complex. The history behind it being that in Africa, each village had a patron Orisha, and everything was the be and all end all of that Orisha, very similar to Greek practice, where Athens had Athena, and another religion or another area had Pan, and another area, Olympia, had Zeus. And you believed in the other spirits because they were connected by culture, by language, by story,
mm-hmm.
but your primary spirit that you went to was the patron of your city. It's true like that in Africa. You might be told you need to go to another city to be initiated to that Orisha as well, but you were first initiated usually to the Orisha that was the patron of your city.
Mm-hmm.
When it transposed to the New World, they realized that certain Orisha had affinities for certain people and they couldn't tell anymore because you weren't born into that city.
Oh, okay.
So that's why they started, one of the reasons that they may have started investigating which Orisha would be the best for you to be crowned under. Oya herself is the wind, a little background there. She is the lover of Shango. She was also married to Ogun at some points, but she is the lightning that does not touch the earth. She is the whirlwind, the wind, and because of that, she's connected to the breath. And because she's connected to the breath, she's therefore connected to death, which is intangible and goes away with our breath. So Oya governs the rites of the dead. She is the mother of, she is called the mother of nine. But one of her children was the first person or demigod or however you want to call it that created the rites of the dead that actually allowed the dead to possess people, the Egungun rites. Egun meaning dead, and gun on the end meaning mount. So mount of the dead. The Egungun cult is very strong in Africa. It actually didn't survive so strongly in Cuba. There we have remnants of it, like our Egun shrines and the Egun sticks and the certain things we do, but we didn't have these ceremonies of Egungun, which is why it merged with Kardecian Spiritism, and because it filled in the hole that was taken, because perhaps the Egungun priests didn't make it, because what they did is they'd go and they'd capture an entire village, and they'd put that village on a boat, and they'd transfer the boat, and if that boat never made it to Cuba, or it went to Brazil instead, you didn't have that Orisha being transferred.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the transportation of these different areas determined certain Orishas that would rise to prominence in different geographical areas. But Oya herself is connected to the dead,
right.
Yes, and is the what they call, they actually call almost all the female Orishas mother of the witches.
Okay.
They're all very, very powerful energies. Female energy in general is an extremely powerful thing.
Right. No, and I know the main ones are, well, there's Yemaya and Oya and Oshun,
and
right, mainly. And I wanted to ask you something because I had this experience at a Bata ceremony, which, I mean, I know that it's a it's a drum ceremony. I don't know the real significance of it. Maybe you could tell me that in a minute, but I just want to say that there was, I guess there was about maybe 60 or 70 people there, something like that, and my mother had just passed away, and I had, you know, was working some stuff out inwardly, you know, emotionally, whatever, you know, for with my mother, and I didn't say anything, but I'd gone with this Oya priestess to this ceremony, and five Orishas came through, you know, the priests and priestesses. We had two Oshuns and a Oya and an Elegua and two Yama, two Yamayas, I think. Anyway, one of them was this big, you know, Latin, Spanish-speaking priest, and Yamaya came through him, and, you know, of course, all the body language changes, you know, everything changes, mannerisms, even speak the words, how they talk, everything. And she came up to me during it, and she spoke in Spanish, and then I was, you know, someone translated it, and she said that she would be my mother now, and my mother had passed away, and that she told me, gave me some instruction, like to do this particular kind of cleanse, you know, that on certain levels I needed to cleanse. And I wondered, I always have thought, and really strongly, that Oya, and I've been divined, and, you know, I've had divination practices that said that she was and everything. But also, you know, maybe it's not set in stone. I mean, maybe it's not set in stone, or maybe I'm not in the process of knowing. But I just wondered, does that mean that she is my, just for that period? And I did a ceremony to her and everything, but does that mean forever, or does that mean just for the time? Do you know?
When you're read in a divination ceremony, that energy surrounds you for a short period. Some people say a cycle of the moon. Some people say 3 months. Depends on the person reading, because mm-hmm. their own beliefs about what they're reading, their shells are going to speak in their language because they need to be able to be understood. But the difference being like an Ita, like a life reading, that would be something that governs your whole life.
I see. Okay.
But when an Orisha comes up to you at a tambor, a bata ceremony, a tambor might be bata, it might not be. Bata is a very specific type of drum. There are three drums. They are double-sided.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very specific tonal quality. Yoruba is a tonal language, so the drums themselves echo the sound of the language.
Right.
And you'll actually hear the patterns of the tones of the Orisha's names and the different Orisha's dance patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very beautiful thing that allows our spirits to come down and mount priests. When a spirit comes up to you like that, you may have, Yamaya obviously has an affinity for you. This doesn't necessarily mean that she's the master of your head. It means, though, that she stands up for you. You have Orishas that will fight for you no matter what. Sometimes your parent does that. Sometimes your parent is there as a source of strength, and you have other Orishas that will do other things for you. You know, Obatala is my head, Oya is my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Ogun is the one that is, I am very much like Ogun in many ways. I'm very headstrong, and I
mm-hmm.
work constantly and do things. And Ogun was the one that said, I am here for you no matter what as well. So even if Yamaya is not your head or she's not your mother, if you are a male Orisha or something like that, she may be the one that speaks for you constantly
right.
and just says, I love you no matter what. And
mm-hmm.
It's a great thing to have such a large energy specifically tell you, I'm here for you.
Oh, yeah, it was very overwhelming. And you know, but then later I had this Brazilian, she's, how do you say it, Brazilian?
Candomblé, yeah.
Candomblé?
Candomblé, yeah.
Okay, anyway, sorry. She did a reading for me. I've known her for a while on the internet. You know, we've been talking back and forth, and she told me that she looked at my head and that Yemaya and Oya were fighting for it, and that of course she said that Ogun was, you know, wherever Yemaya was, Ogun was close by. And I have had all this stuff happen with Ogun as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean when they're fighting for your head? And then, you know, what's the next, I mean, does that end and then you finally end up with one main one, or how does it work?
You will end up with one main one, even if they have to settle it. Sometimes an Orisha, and, you know, their fights aren't like our fights. They're not petty fights.
Uh-huh.
That spirit believes that it can do a lot for you, and it wants you to be their child, because now it's an energy exchange. It's a marriage, and mm-hmm. they feel that they can help you. If Yamaya and Oya are fighting for someone's head, it just may mean that you both of them equally consider themselves your mother, and that will come up later in readings. One will settle. They crown you with one in both Brazil and in Cuba, Cuban-based forms. In Cuba, it's interesting because we place Obatala to that rite. If you have too many orishas fighting for someone's head, they'll crown you Obatala, because Obatala can be crowned on anybody, regardless of who their head may or may not belong to, because Obatala owns all heads.
Mm-hmm.
In Brazil, it's actually they crown to Yemaya, because for them, for us, since Obatala made all heads, we crown to Obatala because he won't turn anybody away. For them, Yemaya, being the mother of the world, is so compassionate that she would not reject anybody.
I see.
And you can make your head mad at you. You can make your head Orisha so upset with you because you have disrespected them and not followed their advice that they don't necessarily want to do good things for you.
Really?
Kind of turn a blind eye, because it's not, you can't abuse it, you know? There's the end, something will happen. Almost in like a Christian sense in some ways. You know, this is about elevation. This isn't about magic. This isn't about power. This is about you elevating your soul and you coming to do what you said you were coming to do before you were born. You know, we believe that you chose your parents. You chose the time and place you were going to be born.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, something like astrology makes a lot of sense to a santero, because you chose the place and time you were supposed to be born.
Exactly. Okay.
And that would be karma. And that would be karma also?
It would be tied into your ori. We all have lessons to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And your ori may have chosen to manifest so that somebody else could learn something. If you know somebody, you know, they gave out examples like this all the time when they talk about past lives, but, you know, how do you justify the death of a child?
Mm-hmm,
that it
right.
dies so young. Well, that ori may have chosen to come to teach other people a lesson. And somebody else may have gotten something out of that child dying that they needed to learn. And that, whether or not that's true, because I don't know how the minds of God work, it is more helpful for me to believe that there is a purpose in everything, because if I can't learn from it, the introspection takes over and you become, you know, depressed, and you can't take on the sins and the weight of the world.
Yeah, my teacher had said to me that between a parent and a child, one is the giver of karma, and one is the taking of karma. It's definitely a lesson. I just want to remind, we have just a little more than 2 minutes left of this show.
Right.
If any listeners, you know, you better call in now and get a question in real quick. Because this is fascinating. It's so much to learn about this.
Just one last thing. You were telling me what your steps were, Jesse. What are the last few steps for you? You know, what happens in that year that will make you full-fledged? And then what will you end up doing? Will you read the coconut? Will you read the shells? I mean, how do you see yourself coming through this?
How do I see myself? Well, fulfilling my ita, my life reading, there are certain things that I'm supposed to do. I will study shells. It is a lifelong process. I will study Odu and Dilogun. Yulagun being the name of the shell divination process. Coconut, you start learning how to read when you receive warriors, so you become more proficient in that. My main interest, truthfully, lies in shells, yes, but more in herbs. And I would love to continue studying herbs. There are prayers to every herbs, and there is a phrase, Kosiewe Kosi Orisha, which means without plants there would be no Orisha.
Oh, maybe you'll come back on another show and do that for, you know, tell us more.
About healing, right? Is this the herbs are used for healing?
Healing and everything. Orisha ceremonies cannot take place without herbs.
And also,
has certain herbs.
Spiritual baths use herbs,
absolutely,
too.
And those herbs are minor, I mean, there are prayers that are to certain plants that are indispensable. We cannot consecrate a priest without certain herbs.
Mm.
They are the cornerstone of our religion. The orishas are born. They're sacred implements. They're sacred stones. They're sacred tools. Everything is washed in an herbal liquid that the chants of orisha are sung into. That is omiero, sweet water, the water that we make, the holy water of our religion.
Well, sorry to interrupt. We're having a countdown.
No problem.
Thank you so
much. We got 30 seconds here.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Do you have a website or anything that we can put up?
No, not yet. I'm still finishing
my
year, and I'll remain appropriately humble, and you'll hear from me.
Well, maybe we'll have you back, Jesse. I hope so.
All right. That'd be great.
Okay,
thanks.
Many blessings. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Happy
so much.
Solstice.
Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Okay, we have 10 seconds.
Yeah, today's the solstice.
That's right. The beginning of summer.
Yes.
Well, Sandy, this is so enjoyable.
Well, thank you. So educational, so inspiring and uplifting. It's powerful information. I'm just so grateful to be a part of it.
Yes, so I guess this is good night until next week when we'll have a voodoo expert.
Virgil from Arkansas. Stay tuned.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye. Good night.